on Spotlight with Darren and Jim, and we're really delighted to have on the line Dr. Sonia Brown, the Senior Lecturer in Aerospace Design in the School of Mechanical and Manufacturing Engineering at the University of New South Wales. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning.
You are an incredible person because you are creating the future, and it really is things that I used to watch on TV but now are becoming reality in this day and age. We talk about aerospace design and carbon composite materials, about aero design. Tell me, what's that all about and what does it look like, please, Sonia?
So the latest thing really coming out in the aerospace design world is these flying cars. And there's many vehicles in development across the world, but they don't really look like what you imagine back in science fiction from, let's say, the Jetsons or Back to the Future. Instead, most of the vehicles in development look a lot more like a cross between a drone and a small aircraft. So they'll have a number of rotors to help them lift up off the ground, and then many of them, not all, will also have wings like a small aircraft to help with the horizontal portion of their flight.
So for example, Sonia, Darren and I want to go this afternoon, let's fast forward. Darren and I want to go this afternoon to Port Macquarie. Tell us where would you think we would go? Would we leave from my background, or, you know, tell me, take us through what's going to happen. Darren parks his land car at my place. We go and get one of these aero-designed vehicles. Tell us what it looks like and what's going to happen. How do we get to Port Macquarie?
So Port Macquarie might actually be a little bit far with the current technology. So when we're talking about these, in the future, we're hoping that they could take off, you know, from small areas no bigger than a helipad. So it could be from your backyard, for example, if you're in a house, and go up to about 250 kilometers is about the limit that we're looking at, because we want these vehicles to be electric. So currently we're working on battery power, and that has a certain limitation to the distance we can really travel in one go anyway. So if you wanted to go as far as Port Macquarie, you'd have to do some stops for recharging along the way.
Okay, how many people would go? So for example, Darren and I want to go to the Hunter Valley and have a look at a particular aspect in the Hunter Valley. How many could go? What do you see the future looking like? Would there be six of us, two, three?
So there's many vehicles in development once again, and they are a range of sizes. Most vehicles in development are between about two and six people, but there are some sitting just outside of that are still calling themselves flying cars or air taxis, but around two to six is what you could expect would fit into one vehicle.
We're speaking with Dr. Sonia Brown, a senior lecturer in aerospace design in the School of Mechanical and Manufacturing Engineering. It's really so interesting in what you're telling both Darren and I and our listeners, Sonia. It truly is. I'm going to try and short circuit because there's so much that we could talk about. Tell me, when we go to buy one, let's just say in the next couple of years, what do you envisage it looking like? Try and paint a picture if you could.
So,
would it be a bubble?
Not to burst any bubbles here, but you're probably not going to be buying one in a couple of years. We're looking a bit longer term than that. Yeah, so I'd say probably 10 to 15 years before you might be able to buy them. You will see them a bit sooner than that, I expect in around 5 years or so, because there are some in development, some in full-scale flight testing. But there's a number of challenges before we can just go and buy one of these. But really, they are effectively going to be what you would consider a pod, mainly, surrounded by these rotors, so at least four up to eight rotors, and as I say, often with a wing coming out of it as well. So you wouldn't expect it to be bigger than what you could fit on a helipad, so if you think about a helipad size, but it's mainly just, yeah, a small pod surrounded by rotors and a wing is what you're going to be looking at. But because of all the challenges we still have to get through before they can be widely available, we are looking further into the future.
Okay, that is fantastic. I'm really excited. So Darren and I, we've arrived in Newcastle, with the 200 kilometers and so on. What cost do you think that they're looking at, just generally speaking? Will they be much more expensive than cars? We're going to go to a break in a moment, and I want to look at the law in the sky in relation to this. And I know that might be a difficult area, but that's a real complex one. But tell us about the costs that we're looking at and where they're trying to walk towards that.
I'm actually not aware of the cost estimates at the time. The focus is more on the cost of operation as opposed to the cost of the vehicle. So one
Right,
of the
okay.
factors in going towards electric propulsion in most cases is reducing the cost of actual operation. But I do imagine, at least initially, the cost of actually purchasing is going to be quite high, a lot higher than a standard car.
Cool.
But it's the cost of operation that we're trying to really focus on bringing down, as well as bringing down things like emissions associated with typical fuels.
Well, Sonia, let me ask you this question, last question before we go to a break. Who's the leaders in the world in this area? I mean, I think we've been doing great stuff here, but who do you look up to in terms of your professional development and your insights into the aerospace design and industry?
So, in terms of the flying car world specifically, there's a few leaders in full-scale flight testing. These include Lilium, based out of Germany, Cora, based out of the USA, SkyDrive, based out of Japan, and Joby, based out of the USA. But there's a number of other bigger players involved as well. Boeing are involved, Airbus are involved, Hyundai are involved, etc., etc. So there's lots of people involved in this. It's worth looking towards as potential future in the flying car industry.
That's really interesting. We're on 90.5 on Spotlight with Darren and Jim, and we've been very fortunate to be speaking with Dr. Sonia Brown this morning with regards to the whole aerospace design and looking at transport in the future. We'll go to a little break and we'll come back. We're very fortunate to have on the line on 90.5 on Spotlight this morning, Dr. Sonia Brown, Senior Lecturer in Aerospace Design in the School of Mechanical Manufacturing Engineering. Sonia, I just want to backtrack for a moment because I want to congratulate you. For those who know, Darren, our producer and co-presenter, is also a person who loves engineering and loves the whole area of the world of measurement and making things and so on, like yourself. Where did you get your love of this? I mean, there's a lot of high, big mathematics. There's a lot of, tend to have been male-dominated, if I can use that term, industries and so on. And yet you've been able to get through that wall and come through. It's really exciting. Congratulations. Where did that love come from?
It came from when I was a kid, just looking up at the sky and being amazed by flight. So ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be in the world of flight and up in the sky and the like. So I just followed that goal right through.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? So, and so your passion drove you specifically because you've completed a doctorate in that area. That's a lot of big, hard study. What was your doctorate in specifically? Because I would like to suggest to our listeners that it would be very much related to the aerospace design.
So my specific doctorate was a lot more focused. Generally, in doctorates, we study very small areas. So I was looking into fracture mechanics of composite structures, and composites as a material are used a lot in the aerospace industry. But yeah, in a PhD, we're very focused on minute detail. So in the aero design world, which I looked at a lot in my undergrad, and now at UNSW in my current role, it's a lot broader and bigger looking generally than the detail we get to in a PhD.
So tip that upside down, and so that practical part that you're doing now, that's coming through as a result of that really specific areas related to the aerospace world.
So the the design part is yeah, a lot more broader aerospace focus, but aerospace overall is very technical in a lot of different areas, and one of the things that's important in design is that we look at it from that almost multidisciplinary approach. We understand aerodynamics, we understand structures, we understand propulsion, etc., etc. So aerospace kind of puts it all together to get to the vehicles that we look at in design.
That's so interesting. I mean, you really have our listeners thinking through their own files in their mind about the whole aerospace industry. It's very exciting. Sonia, if I can ask you, we have such a complexity driving on our roads and it's becoming more complex. What does the sky present to us in terms of challenges?
So when we're talking about flying cars, the real aim is to get a number of them up there. A lot of the early development focuses on getting from point A to point B as almost as a bird flies. But to really improve things like traffic congestion in the cities, say look at a city like Sydney, and you want to remove a lot of that traffic from the ground and put it up into the air. We've got a whole range of issues around the traffic management. If we've got hundreds and thousands of these vehicles flying hundreds to maybe thousands of meters above our head, how are we going to route them? What are we going to do about collision avoidance? And how are we actually going to regulate these vehicles? One of the specific issues is that it's not going to be as simple initially as a driver's license, for example. So piloting requirements are a lot higher. But we want to again bring hundreds or thousands of these into the air, taking cars off the road. We need to reduce that requirement significantly. So there's also a challenge around getting them remotely piloted or potentially pilotless, effectively automated vehicles, which means these vehicles need to be able to talk to each other to decide effectively who has right of way, avoid collisions and those kinds of things. There needs to be pathing and talking between these vehicles and effectively a regulatory framework around that. If you're driving on a like in a car on the road, you've got traffic signs, you've got roundabouts, traffic lights, stop signs, etc., which tells you those things as you go. In
Sonia,
the case,
yeah, I was just thinking, you might be answering this question in what you're about to say, but given that the airspace is a highly regulated at the moment and planes use a lot of automatic features, is it a bit of a green field in that the idea of automatic flying cars can be adapted easily because the regulation is not there yet in that space? What are your thoughts there?
I don't think anything is easy in the aerospace industry. Everything's quite hard. So there is high regulations at present, and all of the testing flights for these vehicles are happening in that highly regulated environment, sorry. But if you want to make these widespread, you need to be able to reduce that. So right now, if you're going to take off, let's say, out of Sydney Airport, right, you've literally got an air traffic controller there telling you exactly when you can go. And if you're coming into land, same thing. It's like, okay, you're going to circle at this many thousand feet before you can land. We need to reduce all those barriers. If you want hundreds and thousands of these in the airspace at the same time, there will be blackout zones, for example, around the airports, including around Bankstown Airport, which is, closer to Western Sydney. There will need to be blackout zones where these vehicles effectively can't go into, but we need to be able to reduce the requirements to make these really viable. So that is a challenge because it's people have to actually think differently as to how these will operate, how they will, effectively do ongoing live traffic management.
So, do you think that the answer is in the autonomous sort of aspect, in that they will be driverless and that will make it somewhat more straightforward to regulate in that highly regulated environment?
It will improve if assuming it all gets approved, which I believe it will in the future, it will certainly improve things like licensing to have it automated. But there needs to be some base rules even for the automation. And it could be that certain levels of flight are going certain directions and those kinds of things. It's just really a bit of a big open question at the moment what that looks like. And then if I have to, change direction and therefore I have to change altitudes to do that, you know, how do those transitions work? They're the complex things where you could end up in a potential collision scenario. So they also just need onboard effectively detection systems so that they don't get too close. And a lot of that can be taken from aircraft and things like radar. But again, most aircraft are designed to be flying a lot further apart from each other than we're talking about when we're talking about flying cars.
So to work it through, the actual design of these vehicles is quite advanced. We're talking still 5 to 10 years, as you said before. But the actual working about how they get up there, there's a lot to work through. And just even in my mind now, I'm thinking, how do you break down and call the NRMA in the sky? I mean, it's going to be different, but you might need to have these kind of pads everywhere around. So if a device is having some difficulty or running out of charge quickly, that it can still land safely. So much to think about. Hey, Jim.
Absolutely. One of the questions, Darren, I was going to ask, and to ask Sonia without, being a pain, but one of the questions that was in the back of my mind was, you know, will there be a curfew or will it be a 24/7 economy in terms of transport? So I think that in itself has got a whole range of complexities associated with it.
That certainly does, particularly as we're looking at these vehicles flying relatively low compared to most current aircraft. So there are studies to try and decrease the noise and the like, and I think it depends on what those noise levels ends up being, if there's going to be curfews and those things. So it's more about how it impacts the people on the ground, because again, the only way you're going to get the large number of these that would make this realistic is if you have people's general acceptances. So things like noise have to play a part, such that, you know, you don't want these buzzing overhead if they are too loud when people are trying to sleep and the like. So there's a whole bunch of issues that still have to be worked through, and I think most of the technological issues are sooner in the pipeline than some of those regulations, how we're going to control these issues, which are going to push the actual timelines for these becoming common out a lot further.
Well, Sonia, Dr. Sonia Brown, thanks for joining us on Spotlight. We've had an absolute fantastic conversation by looking at the whole world of aerospace design and aerospace in relation to cars. It's been a real pleasure for you to be on Spotlight with Dan and myself on 90.5 this morning. And we'd love to have you come back and tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in the latter part of the year. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Darren.